listen to my daddy and my Uncle Jay. Not in a creepy way.
Well, I wake up in the morning each and every day. And I sit down at the table and I hear my daddy say, life is nothing, it's a nothing. Life is nothing but a slap in the face. Life is nothing, it's a nothing. Life is nothing but a fat rat race.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Welcome. This is Eric.
This is Brother Jay.
And tonight, we're going to talk about Rat Race. 2001 comedy directed by Jerry Zucker. It's written by Andy Breckman, and it stars pretty much everybody.
Yeah, there's a ton of great people in this, including people I didn't realize that were in it after having not seen it in probably a couple years. That I'm like, oh, that guy's on Grimm. And, I forgot that Gloria Allred was like in it constantly. And, you know, there's lots of cameos and cute little things. So.
Oh, yeah, it's fun. And there's some fun stories behind it, too. And it's very much unlike 2001, unlike Collateral. This is literally check your brain at the door and just have a fun time.
Yeah, this is a stupid fun movie.
I didn't even care. As I'm watching it, I'm thinking, well, this isn't very highbrow humor at all.
It's not smart humor, but it's not the horribly droning, slow crawl, bad, stupid humor. At least it doesn't have any premise to it of being a smart, funny movie. It's just stupid, funny fun, which is what I like about it. But it has one of the best lines ever in it, so we'll get to that.
It's actually got a couple lines in it that are fun.
It's
actually a pretty clean movie, too. I mean, you could easily play this, you know, in front of kids for the most part. I can't think of anything that's super objectionable.
Well, I think the boobies probably.
I think on the version I saw, they didn't even show the boobies.
Oh, they didn't show them. All right.
They give you a little side boob.
Yeah, and I don't think I saw it, but it's still suggestive. But okay. I mean, again, you know, one man's questionable is another man's art. So.
Yeah. Well, it's not like The Hangover where.
I've never seen The Hangover.
So. Oh well, turns out the first Hangover is kind of funny, and the second one wasn't really funny at all, and the third one I can't bring myself to watching. And this the benefit about this one, too, is that it also doesn't star, Mike Tyson, rapist. Although I guess the less you go into the cast, the better as far as, you know, I don't care how these people are in real life as much as they're just fun in the movie.
Yeah, because I don't understand Gloria Allred being in it.
I think that was probably just it was a cameo they could pull off in one day. Because she was just in the hotel scenes. Yeah. Anyway, so here's the plot. The plot is very simple. It's Donald Sinclair, played by John Cleese, is an eccentric hotel owner. He owns the Venetian Resort Hotel Casino in Las Vegas, and he comes up with these unique things for high rollers to bet on, for super rich people to bet on that's not your normal casino betting opportunities. So he basically has six special tokens that are in the slot machines, and the winners then get taken up to a meeting room and are told that they get to compete for what's basically a race where they're each given a key to a train station locker, and whoever gets there first gets to open it, and there's $2 million in cash and a duffel bag in the locker, and it's Silver City, New Mexico, which is about 400 miles southeast of Las Vegas.
First person gets there in any manner, no matter how they get there, wins. No questions asked.
Yeah, no rules. Just first person there. And of course, the part of the fun is that all these characters are skeptical and nobody believes it at first. And John Cleese keeps saying, you've been racing now for however long and you're still not leaving the room. So that's kind of fun.
Yeah. That's the brilliance of John Cleese is that sometimes, you know, just that even being funny can be funny.
Oh yeah. Just his eyes. I mean, he's got the silly teeth. In this particular role. But, you know, he's just funny. He's a funny guy. You know what's not funny? Dogs barking in the background.
Yeah.
Super not funny. Anyway.
The fake veneers, though, got on my nerves a little bit, but I think it was supposed to be over the top. But it just was kind of... But Dave Thomas as his right-hand man was... I was like, okay, I like Dave Thomas.
So. Oh, yeah. Well, and let's just quickly spell down the teams here. There is Breckin Meyer, who plays an uptight attorney, and then he ends up meeting Amy Smart, who is a helicopter pilot. That becomes important to get him across country. Then we have Rowan Atkinson, Mr. Bean, as Enrico Pollini, an Italian, who, you know,
he's narcoleptic.
Yeah, he's narcoleptic, as it turns out. I don't know. It's so funny because his character is so over the top, but he's also a very innocent character. I guess it must be like Mr. Bean. I haven't seen Mr. Bean, but I assume Mr. Bean is sort of an innocent character. Have you seen Mr. Bean?
Yeah. He's kind of a simpleton.
He's guileless. And, you know, that makes him even more funny. I guess I don't know. I haven't delved into the Mr. Bean catalog, so I don't know much about that. But he's certainly engaging in this role. Then there's Whoopi Goldberg, who is a kind-hearted mother who gave up her child, blah, blah, blah. And then the child is Lene Chapman, who plays a uptight businesswoman who is the daughter. Then there is Cuba Gooding Jr., as Owen Templeton, a disgraced football referee. And then there's Seth Green and Vince. And I don't know how to pronounce Vince's last name. And there's a story behind that, too. But Vince. Vince Velouf. And Seth Green and Vince Velouf play brothers. They're both sort of ne'er-do-wells. And Vince has a recently self-administered tongue piercing, which means he's mostly unintelligible through the whole movie, which adds to his charm. And then there's John Lovitz and Kathy Najimy. Najimy, yeah. Who are hilarious. And they play the pairs. They're and their two children who are on vacation. And just, you know, they're your typical sort of squabbling Jewish couple. And John Lovitz kind of plays his normal John Lovitz kind of character, but in a way that's you know, perfectly acceptable. He's got that sort of smarm slash charm. And then along the way, there's Paul Rodriguez plays a cab driver. Dean Cain plays Tracy, the helicopter pilot's boyfriend. Who else? Gloria Allred shows up. Kathy Bates, who's actually uncredited in the movie, plays a hilarious, very, very small
role. Poor lady.
Yes. And then there's, I guess, Wayne Knight plays a medical transport van driver. And he's playing his normal Wayne Knight role, which is just fine. And then, of course, Dave Thomas, who plays John Cleese's assistant. And he is so funny because he's just a total straight man and plays it perfectly. He seems very uncomfortable with everything he's putting these people through, as well as putting himself through. Along the way, we get lots of fun scenarios or situations that these people get put through. I don't know do we want to talk about individual plot points? I mean, we can actually, if you haven't seen the movie, I think at least I'm recommending that anybody listening to this who hasn't seen it should go out and see Rat Race. Just fun.
Yeah, I think if you haven't seen it, you should stop the podcast. Not that I want to advise, you know, just stop it right now. Go watch the movie and then come back.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't want to spoil anything because I remember watching it for the first time and seriously thought it was one of the funniest movies I'd seen in probably a decade.
Well,
and granted, it was 2001, so, you know, I actually saw it when it came out. I actually think I saw it in a movie theater, which is sad for me. But yeah, no, I absolutely advise you, if you haven't seen this movie, go see the movie. And when you're done with it, watch the deleted scenes and watch the gag reel.
Oh, absolutely. These people are having a lot of fun making this movie.
Yeah, except I watched something, so do we want to go into all the spoilers now?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, okay, you've been warned.
Yeah, everybody's been warned. In fact, I'll put this time on the stamp. You know, if you got to this point and after all these admonitions, we're going to spoil the movie right now.
Yeah, so, you know, send your angry email to yourself if you so. But yeah, no, I think in rewatching the gag reel, I realized that somebody is a bitch in the background. Did you catch that?
I didn't. I just watched the movie again today, but I didn't get a chance to watch the gag reels and...
I watched it by myself this time. I don't think anybody was here with me. So, but like the eighth or ninth time that Seth Green is just like, you know, they're doing it over. And there's some bitch in the background that's like, I got kids. I have to get home.
Oh, that's funny.
And I was like, really? Like, really? Like, they're not trying. It's clear he's trying.
Well, let's actually talk about that actual scene because. The Seth Green and Vince Velouf character, they are brothers, and they have a lot of screen time. They're like a full-fledged six of this movie. And
oh, yeah.
It could be argued that Vince, playing the guy that's unintelligible, actually has the bigger of the two parts. He's carrying a lot of this on his shoulders as far as, you know, all the unintelligible dialogue. And
right, he doesn't have actually dialogue to carry his humor. He has to be physically funny.
Yeah, and straight-faced while he's being completely unintelligible.
I think he did by far the better job than Seth Green.
Oh, yeah, and Seth Green's always fun. But yeah, he was doing actorly things. A lot of Seth Green's performance is just reacting off of him. So you start with this whole premise of they're kind of sinister characters in the fact that they're trying to get rich quick, trying to scam their way into however much money or whatever they can get. So you've got that working for you. But then the unintelligible character, you know, keeps getting translated by Seth Green, and they're just basically talking to each other most of the time. As you build and keep going on and on and on with all these wacky things that happen, at the very end, there's this really dramatic speech where, because at the end of the movie, they all end up deciding to split the money, and then they unwittingly all give the money to charity, and then they all agree that's a good thing, except for Seth Green is last holdout. So Vince's character has to convince Seth Green that he needs to donate his money because his mom, who's in heaven, or their mom, who's in heaven, is looking down at this moment, and he's got to deliver this impassioned speech, being completely unintelligible or mostly unintelligible because of this tongue ring. And in the outtakes, Seth Green cannot hold it together for this speech. He breaks, and he breaks, and he breaks, and he breaks, and there's like a dozen or more. I don't know how many times he breaks, but it's a lot. Dozens of takes they have to do to get this scene done. And Seth Green is blowing it all the time because he just cannot keep a straight face for just his lines. I guess they could have done the cutaway, but you get the sense that all these actors were in the same place during the filming of the last thing.
Yeah, no, I did get the impression, which is why I think the woman was bitching that, you know, she had kids and she had to go. It's because they were all basically stuck there.
I wonder who the bitchy woman was.
I don't know. And I didn't want to go back and find out because I didn't want to hold it against whoever it was, because I absolutely would.
Then again, you could see where, you know, it probably was the end of a long shooting day. And
I'm sorry. You get paid lots of money to goof around on celluloid. What a tough life you must have.
Okay. Anyway. Yeah. And with all these personalities there, too, I'm sure that not everybody is funny all the time.
Yeah. Well, and what I found most unforgivable and inexplicable was Smash Mouth.
Well, but that was just a product of its time. At the very end, they end up at a Smash Mouth concert, and they play All-Star, and all the characters crowd surf. But we're kind of getting ahead of ourselves. If we're going to destroy the plot, let's destroy it for real.
Unforgivable.
It's a product of its time. I mean, who would it be today? Is there a band like that
care.
Today?
I don't know. It would be like, I don't know. I didn't even know who it would be today. Justin Bieber. Who knows?
Yeah, Katy Perry or something.
Yeah, but at least Katy Perry is somewhat redemptive. But Smash Mouth, like that. Anyway.
You don't tap your toe to that song?
No, I sharpen the knives and ice picks to that song.
You got to let it go, man. The 2000s, the 90s, they happened.
I can't abide that. I don't hate Smash Mouth. I just don't like them. Nickelback. Might as well just put Nickelback.
But I wonder who would be the band today. I guess I'm not cool enough or young enough now to even know.
Nope. Yeah, nor am I. I'm not, you know, the Jonas Brothers, and those are has-beens.
It would be like, what, One Direction, maybe.
Oh, perish the thought.
Or who knows? It'd be Skrillex. Anyway, at some point, I want to talk to you about Coachella, but we'll come back to this, to Rat Race.
Well, it's ironic that you mentioned Skrillex and Coachella, because after you posted Coachella, I went into the channel. I'm like, oh, I'm going to watch this, and it was an hour of Skrillex, and I'm like, I will never forgive you.
Oh, that's funny, because I enjoyed the Skrillex at Coachella. Much better than Arcade Fire.
Oh, no, they were even worse. It was like from bad to worse. You know, but one comedian, and I will admit that this is not original, but the one comedian, you know, that described Skrillex as two fax machines fucking.
Yeah, well, yeah. But, you know.
I'm like, but I can't. It's like, no, I don't need to listen to it. First of all, I don't need to listen to an hour of it. Second of all, watching an hour, like, no. So I put it on, I paused the DVR, and then, like, every 10 minutes, I just turn it back to live mode, so it would skip past everything. No. An hour later, it's still Skrillex. I'm so disappointed.
No, but see, for me...
Eventually, I just had to go to bed.
See, for me, listening to Skrillex was just fine because I was actually doing it while editing one of the podcast shows. And so, you know, I'm listening to like 3 minutes at a time and realizing, oh, I've got to take out this silence and I've got to remove this And then, you know, so if it was something that I was kind of more actively engaged in, I wouldn't be able to do the editing. But because it was, you know, EDM background music, it was just fine.
So what you're saying is Skrillex pounds you in the brain to keep you on task because it blocks out every other sensical thing.
No, actually, more offensive to the man himself. I'm saying Skrillex is perfectly acceptable elevator music that I can ignore when I want to think and is pleasant when I'm listening, when there's nothing in the background other than that.
You're a bad person.
It's possible. Yeah, I like electronic dance music. I'm sorry. I do. I like it a lot.
I like electronic, but I just go like, I just can't. Like, there's only so much of that dubstep. I just want to jab pipe cleaners in my ears.
Oh, you realize that every podcast I want to add the drop. I want to be like, wait for the drop, and then we'll drop the beat right there in the middle.
Well, you just call up, you know, Will I Am and get the Black Eyed Peas and, well, because he's got his little sound machine, you know.
Well, sound machines are amazing. Turns out, though, you have to be a musician to use them correctly.
So I've heard. But,
yeah.
But we are way afield.
No,
now,
you know, actually, there's a girl, a young woman, I don't know, a woman, what do you call people these days? There's an artist, a musician, who I posted a thing on, I must have been on Facebook, where she does heart-shaped box using basically a digital looping machine and I think like a keyboard controller and just an interface to her little Power Mac, and she does all the parts. It's fantastic.
Hmm. Yeah. Fascinating.
Yeah, okay, maybe not.
Well, no, it's interesting.
It's watching it is very interesting because she puts all these parts together as you're watching this video. And so by the end of it, she's singing Heart-Shaped Box, and she does the percussion on it, and she does the guitars on it, and she does the vocals on it, and she does, I mean, she makes every bit of it is just her voice or her using a keyboard and using loops. And I find that all fascinating.
But right now we're kind of in the renaissance of interesting things happening. There's a whole, you know, the whole, baby metal, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah.
The Japanese. I mean, I'm not opposed to weird and fun stuff. It's just that some of it, I'm just like, oh no.
Well,
that's
just to,
good. It can't just be.
To tangent completely off, it turns out I have a nostalgic feeling for Cher's Believe using autotune, you know, the wrong way for an interesting effect. Because now you can't listen to a song that doesn't have autotune in it. Hardly. I mean, almost everybody uses some form of autotune, and you never know what somebody's natural voice would sound like unless you're at not even a concert, at like a small club maybe.
Yeah, but that's so sad though, because autotune is going to ruin it for everybody, because, you know, I'm like, it doesn't take any talent to use autotune.
Well, you still have to be creative. I mean, it turns out you can have all of the tools.
Rebecca Black will prove you wrong.
No, she paid for that to happen though. Somebody was creative behind the scenes.
That's what I'm saying. You don't have to be creative. Somebody else can be creative if you pay them.
Well, that's true. Somebody has to be creative. And there is technical skill in using all that equipment.
Sure, but my point is the people who are performing are basically just empty shells at this point. They're not even, they're, you know, absolutely just, you know, they're just tools, if you will.
Yeah,
But what I'm saying is, you know, they've got autotune and somebody else, it's like, you know, it's the modern Milli Vanilli. You've got somebody on stage who's performing, but they're not really anything but just the performer.
Well,
they're not writing it. They're not producing it. They're barely singing it. And they're certainly not, you know, the genesis of it.
It could be argued that more or less that's been happening for forever. I mean, there's always been, like, for instance, country music, you know, hardly anything is written by the performer. Like, the age of the singer-songwriter is relatively recent.
Well, sure, but at least in country music, at least the country music of my childhood, there was, you know, the people were actually singing.
Well, okay, that's true, but they were just there for a voice. They didn't, like, Reba McEntire hasn't written any of her songs.
Oh, sure. Oh, no. Yeah. And look, between the Bee Gees and Barbara Streisand and Prince, and Kris Kristofferson, they've written like everything ever.
Yeah. And hold on. the country music of your youth, I think, consists mostly of Urban Chipmunk, to be fair.
Well, but not all of it, because, you know, Grandpa exposed us to country music, so.
Yeah.
Or maybe he exposed me to country music. So, I mean, yes, the country music of my choice in my childhood was the Urban Chipmunk. But that, you know, but that has its own little, the childish charm to it, as opposed to, you know, the Grandpa and the Patsy Cline and the completely forgot his name, King of the Road, Roger Smith.
Roger Williams. Maybe. Roger Williams.
So anyway.
Is it Roger Williams? So, it must be Roger Williams, yeah.
I don't know Gran Turismo, you tell me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's the whole thing. Yeah. Okay, Munchausen by proxy.
Yeah, whatever. So, I know, but nobody's writing angry emails, so, you know.
No, it amuses me. I leave it all in there because it's hilarious. What are you going to do?
Oh, I agree with you. I laughed at it, too. So,
yeah.
We're totally far afield now. And for everybody listening out there, this is what we're like in real life. We start on a topic and we end up completely in another dimension.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. This may end up being the equivalent of the Primer episode, except that we both love the movie Rat Race.
Absolutely.
And we're going to go back and talk about really funny parts to it.
Ah, yes. And, you know, to date, this movie has one of my favorite quotes of all time. So.
Okay, well, let's get back into it because, okay, so we've talked a little bit about Dwayne and whatever, the Seth Green and the Vince.
Dwayne and Blaine.
Yeah, Vince Le Chiffre. Anyway, okay, you know what, here, let's just use this to tangent off into Vince for a second because I've got a story that I don't know whether I'm going to remember because it's not written in my notes, but apparently Vince Veloof's, he told his manager, or maybe his manager did it on his own, basically pressed for star billing for Vince. So you've got like this probably what? Easily dozen people that you've heard of. Vince is not one of them. And yet he is a big part of the movie. So his management says, hey, we want star billing. Star billing. We want his name on all the posters. We want his face everywhere, blah, blah, blah. And they called the bluff and said, no. In fact, not at all. So we're going to take his face off of the posters. We're not going to mention him in any of the advertising. So poor Vince, who does, you know, yeoman's work in this whole thing, doesn't get any of the, you know, he doesn't get any of the notoriety from it. And of course, he ended up firing his management. But where have you seen him since? Not very many places, so.
Yeah, no, I was trying to think. I couldn't identify a single thing he's been in other than this. And I know I've seen him in things. I want to say I saw him like, he must have been on some show that I watch regularly. Because I recall seeing him in something, but I can't place it. So.
Well, and I don't have it in front of me, but I did look him up and he has worked since. I mean, he's a working actor. He just, this was not the star vehicle that he and his management thought it was going to be. Which, you know, there's a little schadenfreude that makes me smile at that. It's where egos get involved that's very complicated. But did you know, just to talk about billing, did you know that Don Cheadle, he wanted to get above the title billing on Ocean's 11? George Clooney, Don Cheadle in Ocean's 11.
Like, really?
He didn't get that.
Yeah, I just known that was never going to happen.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, what are you going to do? And Don Cheadle's an excellent actor, too. So, you know.
I agree.
You know, yeah, I guess, you know, what did my realtor Carl used to say? Closed mouths don't get fed. So you might as well ask. All they can do is take your face off the entire poster. Yeah, the cow ends up on the poster. But poor Vince, not so much. Okay, so let's talk about, does the quote that you think is what is brilliant, is that a Cuba Gooding Jr. quote or is that a John Lewis quote?
Is a Cuba Gooding Jr. quote.
Okay, because I'm going to start out actually with the John Lovitz character. Even before, and we had mentioned this before, and I had actually edited out a little bit of spoiler before about about the 45-minute setup for the joke, where, you know, his family starts, you know, he's just an obviously Jewish family and two kids, and they're out on the road. I mean, they're not like Woody Allen type Jewish, but, you know, they're Jewish. So they, oh, and they don't want to, I think they slam Volkswagen cars in the beginning because he would never buy a Volkswagen because the Nazis use Volkswagen. So
right.
His family doesn't know that they're on this race. They just think that dad's gone a little bit crazy. They want to stop and go to the bathroom. The daughter does. And dad's like, no, you know, get a bottle or a jar. Girls can't pee into jars. Okay, get a jar and a funnel. And she's like, Dad, it's number two. And then she uses a phrase that has entered my lexicon at that day at your house in Portland on vacation for me that I've used every day since. Well, not every day, but has been in my lexicon at the top for a very long time. And she used the term, Dad, I'm prairie dogging, which they're like, what does that even mean? And then she explains it, which is beautiful.
I think the boy actually explained it.
Oh, yeah. No, you're right. The son explained it.
Right.
Yeah. It's just hilarious. So that, to me, was like madcap screwball comedy. That is a funny joke. The whole prairie dogging thing is hilarious. Followed by the fact that they want to stop at the Barbie Museum in the middle of the desert. And so they're like, fine, we'll go stop at the Barbie Museum. And, of course, it's the Klaus Barbie Museum.
I laughed at it, and then I felt bad, and then I laughed at it some more.
Oh, it's hilarious. You know, they're talking about, you know about the Butcher of Lyon, but you don't know what a family man he was, and an excellent musician, and all this stuff. So anyway, so they end up through a variety of shenanigans, end up stealing Hitler's town car and traveling cross country in the town car, and then they piss off a lesbian motorcycle gang, and that culminates in the motorcycle gang attacking them going off the road and smashing into like a, what was that, World War II commemorative,
It was a World War II reunion.
Yeah.
It was a Memorial Veterans reunion.
Yeah. Okay. So they end up smashing to the podium and John Lovitz comes out, and gives a speech because he has burned his tongue and gotten black lipstick on his upper lip. He ends up basically giving like an Adolf Hitler-like speech while doing the Nazi salute to all these World War II veterans.
Which when I saw that in the movie, I nearly wet my pants.
Oh.
It was so funny because the setup was so long and it was one of those where it was absolutely unexpected because out of all the things that I would have thought of all the Hitler jokes, I would have never seen that coming. Like, and the genius that was the setup to that joke, plus the execution of that joke, which I think John Lovitz, I think the execution of that was flawless.
Oh, absolutely. And there were so many parts to that joke that when it all came together, it was just perfect.
Yeah, it had a lot of moving parts in it that all came together, which were, you know, the cigarette lighter burning the tongue and hitting your face on the steering wheel, which you smeared this really old lipstick that had turned black and, you know, and then, you know, not being able to talk because you burnt your tongue and flailing around. It was one of the funniest, you know, one of the funniest setups of a skit joke I've seen probably in years and years. Even still.
Well, and it was, you know, what's also funny is, so Whoopi Goldberg and her daughter, and basically, you know, all these characters are, none of them are developed at all. Just, they're basically stereotypes. You don't really get a good feel for me. Just know that Whoopi Goldberg seems to be a very nice lady and her daughter seems to be a super uptight businesswoman and they're in the car together. And that's all you need to know. They take a little detour and they get directions from this lady who wants them to buy a squirrel and they don't want to buy a squirrel. And she gives them the bag of nuts and they're like, oh, thank you. And the daughter's kind of rude and, you know, the mother's nice and friendly or whatever, but they don't buy a squirrel. And so Kathy Bates, the squirrel lady, gives them bad directions and they end up going off a cliff and smashing into a whole bunch of other cars that Kathy Bates has led astray after this whole Burma Shave line of signs down the cliff that they're or the embankment that they're going down that says, should have bought a squirrel, which is beautiful.
Yeah.
Anytime you can use Burma Shave humor, I think it's a good thing.
Driving to the Oregon coast, there's actually a set of signs that are very much with Burma Shave. And Last time I drove through, I was like, next time I come through, I have to stop and take pictures of these because it makes me laugh every time.
Yeah, it's just a clever little way to tell a joke. And if you can sell some shave cream at the time, then, you know, it's America.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing is, like, I was trying to think back of all the characters in this movie. None of them are especially likable.
Oh, no. No, not at all. No, they're all kind
of... With the exception of the, you know, Enrico Fellini guy, which he was kind of likable, but only because he was, like he just kind of ditzy and fell asleep repeatedly. He was probably the most likable of them all.
Yeah, exactly. He was guileless. He had no... He wasn't in it for greed. He was just happy. He was like, oh, it's a race.
Right. Yeah. But everybody else, I think, was like the lawyer guy, he was just a schmuck.
Yeah.
And, you know, and Dwayne and Blaine were just, you know, dippy teenagers, basically, is I think what they were trying to be portrayed as. And Whoopi Goldberg was played as, you know, an airhead, and her daughter was some witch. And Cuba Gooding Jr., who was just kind of... that didn't want to be jerk, that ended up being a jerk, which just ended up being a bigger jerk.
Well, he was the misunderstood guy who was seen by the entire sports community. He basically blew a coin toss as a NFL ref. Actually, I guess he had a history of not making great ref calls, but he actually blew a coin toss call that ended up the team lost the game because of the coin toss. And so he's basically hiding out.
Yeah.
Are you unloading the dishwasher?
No, I'm trying to retrieve something, and I dropped it, and I'm making horrible messes.
That's okay.
Sorry, you're going to have to edit this out.
No, it's okay. Are you trying to retrieve it with the skill crane?
No, it's on my pot rack, and it's a mess, so. So anyway, so I'm all better now. That's one thing is I don't like, you know, you really don't end up liking any of these characters.
No, not really. Yeah, you don't care who wins. I mean,
right.
It's just as well that nobody ends up with the money, because nobody deserves the money. Yeah. Well, the Breckenmeyer character, who seems to be super honest, he basically gets the helicopter pilot to give him a ride because he claims that his sister is deathly ill, or was in a shark attack.
Yeah, shark attack.
Yeah, and he has to get to Santa Fe, New Mexico, or whatever. Okay, so Cuba Gooding ends up in a cab with Paul Rodriguez, who's now figured out that he's lost $20,000 because of this guy's bad refereeing.
And I'm sorry, but what cab driver has $20,000 to bet on a game?
Well, they are in Las Vegas.
But if he had $20,000, he wouldn't be driving a cab.
Oh, I suppose. I don't know. Well, it's funny. That wasn't nearly as irritating as the fact that he took him out to the desert to basically murder him.
Well, there's that.
I mean, he takes him out to the desert, and he takes his shoes and his pants and leaves him in the middle of the desert, which is going to murder him.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's like, that's kind of, I mean, granted, 20 grand is a lot of money, but you're murdering this guy. Luckily, it's played for huge comedic effect, because he ends up standing in the shadow of a cactus because the sand is too hot otherwise. And I thought that was a tiny little brilliant touch.
Yeah.
Because he ends up taking off most of his clothes and putting them on his feet so he doesn't burn his feet.
Yeah, no, the clothes shoes were hilarious. Which also leads to the rest stop.
Exactly, which leads to, I think, your favorite.
Bathroom scene.
Yeah, so take it away.
Her vagina!
Yeah, well, that's true. I had forgotten about that whole thing. He ends up at a rest stop where a bus driver is in the bathroom relieving himself. And he goes in and he sees, okay, if he can take this bus driver's uniform, he can then jump on the bus and drive the bus to the place where he's going to pick up his $2 million. So he goes in there and he comes up with a story that his wife is having a baby. And so he needs his coat, you know, to capture the afterbirth or whatever. And the guy keeps getting further and further squicked out by this terminology that he uses. And finally at the end, he just says, I need your pants. I was like, why do you need my pants? Like, it's for her vagina. Anyway.
Yeah, I know. It's
like,
it's the most ridiculous thing. I mean, I can't believe it. Of all the lines, I didn't expect that to happen. And my dog has a squeaky toy.
So now vagina wasn't the speech that you liked the best, though.
No, my favorite line of the whole movie was...
Wait, hold on. So Cuba Gooding gets the bus driver's uniform and gets on the bus and pretends to be a bus driver. And he sues...
Realizing that as he gets on the bus, it's a bus full of Lucille Ball impersonators.
Going to an I Love Lucy convention.
Yeah, which in itself was like comedic gold. I mean, just the premise of that alone was just brilliant. But then the constant, you know, the constant just slapstick Lucille Ball, you know, rolling humor that happened was, they could have actually made an entire movie just of that.
And everything that happens on the bus, it's super wacky and you know, completely implausible, but it was also exactly like an I Love Lucy skit.
It was absolutely an homage.
Yeah.
You know, from the point, you know, from when they're all crying and the suds in the toilet and the, you know, the hair on fire and the, you know, getting off the bus and the tire, trying to help with the tire, but the tire rolling down the hill.
Oh, yeah. And the bus falling on its side.
Exactly. I mean, it was so, like, crazy over the top, but, like, absolutely what would have happened in a Lucille Ball episode.
And, you know, every so often they're, like, going, well, like, you know, like Lucy would do. Or, anyway, but, okay, which comes to the line that you love the best?
Well, when finally I think Cuba Gooding Jr. loses his shit and he's just like...
Oh, don't feel bad. It's not your fault.
We'll tell the company. We won't let them fire you.
No bus driver.
Don't say that.
No, I'm not. I'm not a bus driver.
Oh, you mustn't be so hard on yourself.
Hey, everybody! Who's the world's greatest bus driver?
Owen! Shut up, you crazy Lucy bitches! Shut up!
I must have rewound it, I don't know how many times, just to listen to that again, because I think Derek will attest, he's sitting on the couch laughing right now as I'm describing it. Because it was one of the best lines ever, because he just delivers it. Because you could tell that maybe he had heard one too many of the crying Lucys, probably in real life, on the set that day. And he really kind of meant it when he delivered it.
Oh, by this time, he's got this eye twitch going, and it's great. I mean, it should be a ringtone. Why don't we just make it a ringtone?
Oh, that would be awesome. I could.
Yeah, we can actually make that as a bonus people who buy the podcast app available sometime soon.
I think we would get in trouble for that, but, you know.
More trouble than just putting it in the show itself. Well, let's not talk. Wrong number.
So we digress. Okay. Shut up, you crazy Lucy bitches.
If you haven't seen the movie and you're listening to this far, there's no way for me to express how much comedy gold is in that one sentence.
Because it's the delivery of all the frustration of the preceding couple scenes, so it absolutely is a payoff.
Okay, so the Whoopi Goldberg character and her daughter having the thing with the squirrels, their next step, because they're lost in the desert now too, they end up at like some sort of salt flat where they're testing out a rocket car to break the land speed record, and they end up stealing the rocket car. Which, of course, I thought was a stupid premise for a couple reasons. One of which is, you know, okay, you forgive the whole implausibility of stealing the rocket car. But then, okay, the rocket car goes 700 miles an hour or whatever. Yeah. It kind of implies that they're, like, spending a half an hour in the car or something to get all this distance. Anyway, but you have to forgive that.
Well, and not only that, the unrealistic expectation after the fact that it's trashed and that they're so dizzy that they're dizzy for like an hour after.
Well, that worked out well because they end up stumbling out of the rocket car and they're so disoriented that they end up running into a group of mental patients on an outing, and because they're talking gibberish and their hair is all messed up, even though as best we could tell, how would their hair get messed up in the capsule of the rocket? Anyway, I won't talk about that. And so again, it's a comedy jokes. So they end up in this bus full of mental health people, which is fine. But you know, the squirrel in the beginning, this is the one comedy thing that I thought was sort of silly and like not worth the rest of the movie, was the rocket car and One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest bus outing. But, yeah. You know, you can't hit them all. They're not all home runs, apparently.
Yeah. No, I'm, you know, and not everything could be hilarious, but that was probably my least favorite plot line.
Yeah. I thought Wayne Knight did a good job as the guy transporting the heart cross country.
Well, it was okay. I mean, I'm not a big fan of his, so I know a lot of people really love him, but I, you know, because he was with Newman on Seinfeld, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I know this is going to make me a bad American. I don't like Seinfeld.
No, it's okay. You don't have to.
I like Seinfeld. I like Seinfeld's stand-up. I like Seinfeld, like, on his own, but that show I could never abide.
I thought, actually, the Amy Smart doing just a quick flyover of her boyfriend's house had, you know, it was sort of funny, where she attacks him with the helicopter. That was, you know.
And the Dean Cain tangent, I was pleasantly surprised to see Dean Cain and laugh a little bit, although, you know, I'm, you know, but again, it was one of those, like, oh, it's a cameo kind of
ish. Yeah. And it's, you know, again, it's not really comedy gold. It is no, it's no Hitler speech at the World War II veterans meeting. It's no, shut up, you Lucy bitches. So everybody ends up at the end. Oh, and there's a cow. Forgot the whole cow.
Yeah, the cow and the balloon and, yeah, the hoo-ha.
Yeah, there's
the milk. Yeah.
There's a little mayhem where they end. Yeah, the milk, the fight. That was, you know, again, there's a part where Seth Green and a guy who stole their key are both hanging from a cow.
But not just a guy that stole their key. He's Silas Weir Mitchell.
And what does he do?
Anybody who watches Grimm will recognize him as Monroe.
Oh, well, he did a fine thing, especially when he and Seth Green are basically squirting milk at one another.
Yeah, well.
Yeah.
I didn't say it was his most shimmering, brilliant role.
No, well, it was utter mayhem.
It was pretty, I thought it was funny at least. So.
Yeah, it was fine. And they end up with the cow, end up driving the car at the end. It was, whatever. They got a cow to drive the car. That's, you know, they managed to work that in there somehow.
And it was a nice, it was a classic car, too.
Yeah. And at the very, so at the very end, they end up smashing into the Smash Mouth concert, literally, and end up giving the money to feed the children. And we have the speech by Vince LeChiffre. Then Seth Green gives the money away. And then they all crowd surf to Rockstar. Or no, All-Star. All-Star? Yeah. All-Star by Smash Mouth. Which, by the way, I tapped my toe that song. I'm sorry, I'm not made of stone.
Good for you.
You know.
But then came the nice twist of then they gave all, you know, they made the rich guy give all his money away to charity.
Yeah, of course, because, you know, the real bad guy in the whole thing is John Cleese, and so they, and all the rich guys, and I guess they're in the deleted scenes. There's a whole succession of other stunts that he's doing that all these rich guys are
other gamblers.
Yeah, all these guys are betting on. So. As far as I'm concerned, Rat Race is a complete, wonderful, very simple, no heavy lifting movie. Highly recommend it. It's on
it's
my own.
It's a giggle fest. I would say it's a giggle fest. It's not a guffaw fest, but it's a giggle fest. And it's not, you know, it's not stupid, stupid, stupid. It's kind of stupid, but it's kind of cute. And it has some great funny parts and some of the best one-liner and gags you're going to see.
Yeah. It's harmless at the very least, you know? Fun. I like fun. Fun is good. You know what's not fun? 2001: A Space Odyssey. Not fun at all.
I knew you were going to go right into that.
Well, at this point in the show, well, actually, do you have anything else to talk about for this particular episode?
I don't believe so. I think we've pretty much beaten this one to death.
Okay, well, I do have something that we need to address here, and that's to send some shout-outs to people.
Okay.
Okay? So I'm just going to use first names and last initials, and I'm probably going to forget somebody, but... we need to thank Barry S. and Krista D. and Cheryl B. and Robin H., who used to be Robin S., but may soon be Robin B., although I think it would be kind of funny for her to be Robin HB from a whole religious thing that only she will really understand, but that's okay. And let's see, Sharon B., Connie O., let's see, who, those are, everybody there has left direct comments, and I really appreciate that. For everybody listening right now, that you're the reason why we do this. This is, it's fun, but it's also great to hear feedback. And I know that some of these episodes have, at least inspired people to rent or buy movies, and that's pretty cool as far as I'm concerned. Oh,
well, and if,
wait, hold on.
If Barry S. is listening, then we still have dinner. I still owe him dinner, so.
Well, you know, okay, I can't mention Barry S. without saying thank you to Travis W.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, of course, Derek M. and Ben J.
And Derek M. is appreciative.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, these people are supporting our little cause. So.
Yeah, yes, and our mother.
Well, of course. Oh, well, I thank our mother and father for bringing us into this world and for teaching us.
Well, I know the inside jokes a lot of people don't understand of the nuance of
our mother.
Of our syntax. So.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because, until I am editing all together, I'm like, we are referring to this, far too often, but it makes me funny because it makes me say it twice every time. Like, our mother, or our father.
One day we'll have to have an inside baseball kind of podcast where we discuss kind of the inside behind the curtain things, but that has to be like episode 100.
Exactly. Yeah. And I have some thoughts about episode 100, but since this is episode 10, I think we've, gotta keep this train going for a little bit.
It's positive. The train's going forward.
Oh, absolutely. I'm down for 100. Yeah. In fact, I've got Quantum of Solace or Solace, depending on who you're talking to. And in fact, I'm the only one who says Solace, I think. And Skyfall. So we can do that for next week if you're interested. Unless you have something.
We were going to say that for episode 14, though.
Oh, you're right. You're right. I'm sorry. So what should we do for next week?
That's a good question. We could do Princess Bride. We could do, it's hard to know what you haven't seen so we just have to pick something that at least one of us has seen. So
well, this is your turn though. So if we want to do Princess Bride, great, but, you should be able to pick this one completely. And you don't even have to pick this moment. You can just, think on it if you want.
Yeah. Let me think on it. Except it's good for us to put it out in the podcast, because then if people want to watch it, they can watch it beforehand.
True, except as it turns out, it's funny because if I put out the Primer podcast and say, hey, we're talking about Rat Race next, well, I don't factor in that, of course, Drew and I are going to have talking about something else, which will kind of go in between, and then you and I will end up talking about something else that becomes before we get to Rat Race, and what? And because it's 007, we do James Bond, so... Yeah, I definitely want to put out a coming attraction sort of thing. I think I might just do that.
And you have my list of judgment, right?
Oh, I definitely have your list of judgment. And we can do any of those things.
Well, that's what I'm saying. We should probably go through the list of judgment, at least. And then if there's any of the movies on my list of judgment that you haven't seen, I can't recall if there's any that you haven't seen.
Oh, there are a couple. So we can
Also, you had mentioned Hunt for Red October.
Oh, yeah. That'd be fun.
So,
well, do you want to do Hunt for Red October next?
Yeah, I could do that. Yeah. That'd be cool.
That'd be great. It'd be fun.
You've been listening to Not in a Creepy Way. If you have a rant or rave, please send your emails to rants@notincreepyway.com.
Like us on Facebook. Give us 5 stars on iTunes. Leave a comment. Turns out you can leave a 5-star rating and the comment could say your show sucks. And it still makes us happy.